Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And in Washington, D.C., as I look for my notes on this, the sequester is certainly slowing things up. But could the president and Congress actually be headed for a grand bargain, a long-term deficit and budget agreement, tax reform, health reform, Social Security, the whole deal? There are signs that it may finally be happening. Let's read the tea leaves with Elizabeth Williamson, D.C. reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. It's nice to be with you. Don't you love that term, grand bargain? It sounds so optimistic and hopeful.
Are you not? Are you a cynic?
I think I'm getting jaded. I better move back to Chicago.
You've gone to the dark side from skeptic to cynic. All right, let's start with the newest development, which by itself might leave one skeptical or cynical, and that is that House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan released another 10-year budget proposal this morning, and it's basically the same things as he and Mitt Romney ran on last year.
Mm-hmm.
Repeal Obamacare, no new revenues, end Medicaid as a federal entitlement and turn it into a block grant to the states. Here he is talking about it on Mark Levin's radio show last night. Paul Ryan.
They will pass theirs. We will pass ours. And we'll see if we can find common ground somewhere in between. The way I look at it, Mark, is, yes, ours will not become law. I had a long talk with President Obama about this the other day. Let's just suffice it to say we don't see eye to eye on a lot of these issues. But the point is, where can we get some spending cuts that we can find common ground on?
All right. And that was actually the hopeful Ryan who came later in the interview. Here is Ryan laying down the gauntlet on what's actually in his 10-year budget.
Among the highlights, as you well know, we're not fans of Obamacare, so we repeal Obamacare in our budget. We have a plan to save Medicare, not only for the current generation, but for the next generation. We keep our military strong so we don't balance the budget on the backs of our men and women in the military. We proposed fundamental tax reform to stop picking winners and losers through the tax code through crony capitalism, but by lowering tax rates with a broader tax base for every family and business in America so they can be competitive and get a pro-growth economy. We do this by cutting $4.6 trillion, and government spending still grows over the decade.
So my question, Elizabeth Williamson from The Wall Street Journal, is why is Ryan reintroducing essentially the same things that he and Mitt got creamed in the election on so badly in the fall?
When you said last night, there he is speaking last night, I thought you were, it almost sounded like there he is speaking last October. Because you're right, it's exactly the same thing. I think that they believe in this. I mean, the sort of nice way of putting it is they believe strongly in these tenets that they're putting forth, and the maybe more cynical way of putting it is they don't have any other ideas. One thing they do, and this has, you know, led people to talk about how this is a hopeful sign that maybe they are headed toward this vaunted grand bargain, is they do leave in place the a higher income, the higher taxes on high income people.
The $400,000 or $450,000 plus that was negotiated in the fiscal cliff deal?
Right, right.
All right. So a Paul Ryan privatization budget, if you want to call it that, is not so new. One thing that is new is that for the first time in years, the Democratic Senate is also drafting a 10-year budget at the same time. And here's New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand on our show last week when I asked her if the Senate would do that to help get to a grand compromise.
She's working on a budget to present to our caucus to take us through that she intends to be very balanced. I think she will look at how do we strengthen our entitlements but also save money. She will also look at what kinds of savings can we have that are more reasonable and appropriate. And then she will also look at how to change tax rates so that we can raise the revenue that are necessary. I think we will have a strong budget that Patty will deliver to us in the next couple of weeks. And I am very eager to see what she talks about.
And she was talking there about Senator Patty Murray, who I guess is the Senate Democrats' equivalent to Paul Ryan in the House, who's leading this budget development process on that side. But Elizabeth, how much of a change is it that there will be a Patty Murray budget and a Paul Ryan budget at the same time?
Well, it is interesting because it does give them real ground for debate. I mean, the budget blueprint that the Senate Democrats are drafting would raise about $1 trillion in new taxes over the next 10 years, and it would cut another trillion from spending. So it's kind of a wash there. But that would never balance the budget fully. And this is something that's caused the Republicans, of course, to deride this plan before it's even released. The other striking point here is that the president himself is yet to release a budget blueprint, which is really unheard of, that you would have Congress release their budget before the president sets forth his vision for what he'd like the budget to be.
But can I stop you on that?
That'll be 2 months overdue by the time they release it in early April, as they say they will do.
But does it matter what the president does? Because I thought the point that the Republicans in the House and the Senate keep making is that they don't want to respond to a theoretical Obama budget. They want to respond to an actual Senate budget that Democratic senators have to vote for and put themselves on the line for, just as the Republicans get out there and put themselves on the line by voting yes on the Ryan budget. And then there will be the basis for compromise. So isn't the Senate budget really the key here?
Well, it definitely is. It is a sort of working, you know, as you say, sleeves rolled up kind of budget that they can fight over. At the same time, you want to have the president weigh in, or at least, you know, I mean, he's obviously meeting with his own leadership in Congress, but you want to have him kind of weigh in and set forth a vision, because you don't want to have them come back. I mean, look at Simpson-Bowles. Okay, here's how we trim the deficit. Everybody signs on to this committee, and then at the end, they sort of chop off their ice flow and leave them out to drift, and nobody adopts anything that they've worked so hard to settle on and to put forth. So, you know, there could be a congressionally crafted compromise in the offing here, but at the same time, it's a kind of topsy-turvy process that makes it hard to predict what the outcome will be.
But let me then come back to that original Paul Ryan clip from Mark Levin last night, where he kind of says, I don't expect my budget to be the way this ends. And he hints, more than I think I've heard in the past, that a compromise with the Senate Democrats might be on the way. Listen.
They will pass theirs, we will pass ours, and we'll see if we can find common ground somewhere in between. The way I look at it, Mark, is, yes, ours will not become law. I had a long talk with President Obama about this the other day. Let's just suffice it to say we don't see eye to eye on a lot of these issues. But the point is, where can we get some spending cuts that we can find common ground on?
Where can we get some spending cuts that we can find common ground on? Mm-hmm. We will compromise, use that word. So does this mean they're likely to find ways to actually split the difference on a long-term plan once there is a Senate and a House budget?
Well, you'd certainly hope so. I mean, there is room for compromise in some areas. If they had taken, maybe if they had taken this platform of let's get rid of Obamacare completely, if they had, you know, put out a few more olive branches. But you're right. He does say, let's sit and look at individual items here and see if we can come up with a compromise. What may happen is that, you know, they'll end up taking a look at one specific piece after another and trying to find a number in between, rather than sort of arguing on the basis of ideology, which is what has gotten them in trouble for the last 4 years.
And here's another sign of possible compromise in the works, along the lines of what you said, looking for some of the numbers. This is Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin on ABC This Week on Sunday. Johnson was one of the Republicans, as you know, who President Obama dined with last week in his new Take a Republican to Lunch charm offensive. Listen to how positive and specific Johnson is in describing the president at that meal.
Well, it was a very honest, frank, pretty complete discussion of, you know, the problems we face in this nation. President Obama opened it up, really prioritizing the problems, certainly making the point that it's health care, it's Medicare. You know, from my standpoint, the input I provided to him is, if we're going to really get to an agreement, this is a good first step. I mean, you have to start meeting with people, you start developing relationships. You got to spend a fair amount of time figuring out what we agree on first. You know, so many times we're talking about different numbers, and we have to first agree on the facts, the figures. One interesting point he made is, he said, you know, the problem with Medicare is about a dollar of every basically Americans pay in a dollar, but they get more than $3 out in benefits. He said people generally don't understand that. They think that money's theirs. And the point I made to him is, you know, Mr. President, you are in a unique position to be able to make sure the American people understand that. We're not going to be able to solve these very difficult problems unless we start laying the groundwork and prepare the American people for the solutions.
Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin on ABC This Week with George Stephanopoulos on Sunday, and Elizabeth Williamson from The Wall Street Journal, my guest. Elizabeth, I heard a lot there. Like, he seemed to say, for example, that the president is now preparing his Democratic base for cuts to Medicare because the president acknowledges that its growth is outpacing its revenues 3-1. Was any of that surprising or newsworthy to you?
Here's what I think is a terrifically optimistic sign in all of that. The president, unlike members of Congress who do have to run for re-election beginning in 2014, is in a very unique position, and we've seen him signal this on other issues, immigration, gun control. He can go for broke on something that is the biggest third rail in politics, and that's trimming entitlement programs. Both sides agree this has to be done. Both sides agree this is political death for anyone who takes the lead. But the president doesn't have to worry about that. So you can see Johnson and other Republicans looking at him to say, can you lay this out? And, you know, and if there's ever anybody who can make a convincing oratorical case for anything, it's Barack Obama. So if you can lay this out as something that we're sorry, we know this is frightening to people, it needs to be done, then he provides them with a little bit of cover to do the sort of numbers work behind the scenes. And I think that would be the most positive outcome by far to this fight.
And then the Republicans would have to get off their zero new revenues platform, because almost nobody thinks that that's a realistic way to get to zero deficit in 10 years without slashing the hell out of everything. So are they leaving themselves any rhetorical cover to do that? They're saying no, 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 so unequivocally.
Yeah, except they do leave that, as we talked about, Brian, they do leave that upper bracket income tax hike in place.
But that's not enough. The president keeps making that point.
Yeah, no, that's true. And it may be that that's what he exacts from them in exchange for his getting out front on entitlements.
All right.
But again, if they could focus on specific numbers, mm-hmm. and then in tax reform, you know, there again, you have another big heading under which a lot of individual, smaller, relatively politically painless deals could be done.
We have
tax reform is a screaming, crying need like entitlement reform. And maybe in there they could find some revenue, too.
All right. And the negotiations creeping toward actual talks or actual negotiations. Elizabeth Williamson, covering D.C. for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for bringing us up to date.
My pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.